Michaelis, I want to launch with a question, which I want you to talk about repetition and series, the difference between a repetition and the collection that makes a series, if there is a distinction that you make.
Well, the series...
That's me
correctly. Well, the theory is often coming out of a method of working where some rules get established which then make the piece, and through the repetition in that case, the concept becomes more clear than if it's just a one-off thing. While repetition can also be the repetition of something, of one predecessor that exists, so there's a variety of how you can go about it. But what's your exact question there?
The distinction between a series and what is simply an act of repetition, in the sense that in repetition there is something obsessional. But there may be something in the series as well that's obsessional. So, you know, the way the collector wants to complete the collection or wants to extend it.
Yeah, but also in a way, often once you've cleared the set of rules you put to it, which you of course can always change on the way, but if you have set some rules and it works, it also establishes a routine. Which over the way executes the piece, and you accumulate material, and then later you can still look back at it and see if it works or not. And it's a mode I quite enjoy working with, because I like daily routines. I have a lot of pieces which are ongoing parallel to each other, which also sleep for a while, and then I can get back to it. And it's like a formula. Sometimes if it works, it can become a series. While some other pieces, maybe they cannot become series. But as it turns out, I have quite often employed series, especially in my collage practice, like the butterflies, that's a series, or the chameleons, or the migration.
Can you talk about time as well, the length of time that a work might last, or when something, it's clear that something will become work? And partly I'm asking this because when I met Michaelis in Berlin nearly a year ago, he was about to be Father Christmas in this particular German Berlin tradition, where you turn up at someone's house dressed as Father Christmas with some elves and some angels.
Right.
So angels. And I asked you if it was a work, and you said you didn't know yet, but you would have been doing it for quite a long time.
Yeah, at this time, actually, I already consider it a series of self-portraits. That had started as a student job. The holy evenings, I call it now, because in German Christmas Eve is called der Heilige Abend, the holy evening, and the plural already sort of contests that notion.
I'm going to put the narcissistic poem back on.
Alright. Now the other question, that actually doesn't bother me so much, and for every project I do there's at least five I don't. So, if you want to know if there is a filter, yes, there is a filter.
Yes, the question I have is perhaps not well articulated as yet. I'm still thinking about it all. But I went to see Laurens Wiener in Amsterdam, and I just sat there for hours trying to make sense of it. And you've got him on the list, and you've got Wittgenstein on the list, and I'm thinking, those two are just so opposites. You know, Wiener is words which are visual, like you've used words as well. And Wittgenstein was so much into the meaning of language and the way we use language, that's where the meaning lies. I'm just trying to get some handle on you.
All right, so maybe I should explain a bit more about this narcissist poem. I have written it in the way that I have declared this to be a poem, but I haven't put this list together. This is the real name index of a circulating anthology. This is actually an anthology by Annette Gilbert about appropriation literature and appropriation in literature. And I just happened to be the one with the most entries on that page. So that was sort of already made as a narcissist poem. And I also like the structure of it, like you have the name, then you have the numbers, and when you read it, it's a very boring, a durational piece. But also it's at the same time also, you can also receive it rather lightheartedly.
May I ask about the references, the art historical references? Because you asked how many people knew Ed Ruscha's book, and there was a sort of spectacular and embarrassing blankness in the room, largely. Don't show off, Brian.
It's not mine.
Okay, maybe you or Carrion, for example. So there'll be moments of real recognition for some people at countering your work, and for others, there's no recognition at all. So the work is the work still functioning without that recognition, or do we rely on a kind of après-coup, a later discovery? How much does one need to know?
Yeah, that's a good question, which I can't necessarily answer. But I'd say there is different ways to read a thing, and I think a good work can also be read in different ways, and also maybe different levels of complexity, which some works can have. And I like to hide also other things within the works, even for the ones who do know the references. So if you spend more time with it, sometimes you can discover something. And a really good work, if it's a really good work, you will even discover something I haven't discovered. I mean, it's not only about my work, it's more general about any good artwork which is playing with discourses.
Question from
Samaya. Hi. It's obvious, but I realised what I really am enjoying about your work is that you're bringing new meaning to a book, and you're reimagining it as a piece of artwork. And I was just wondering for you, because you keep calling it a book, what and thinking about its context, or when it's in a gallery, or when it's in a library, how do you want your piece to be treated? Do you want it to be treated as a book or as a piece, solely as a piece of artwork?
Well, ideologically, I would not want to prescribe it, but personally, probably as a book. What I like in books that even if the content is complex and difficult, they can circulate rather unpretentious in different contexts. Like, I've always envied authors as opposed to sculptors who can carry the work of their lifetime in a plastic shopping bag with them. That's something I like in books, and why I also like this medium, and also that it can circulate in different contexts, and you can't really control it, and that also makes the power of a book, that you cannot control how it's going to be read, and where, and by whom. And maybe that's what I like about it. If somebody wants to put it in a vitrine, it's a pity because you will only see one spread, but that's also one way to look at it. And maybe it will get appreciated for the wrong reason, but who am I to tell what's the right reason anyway?
Have you ever chased your books? Like, once they're out there, have you ever tried revisiting them?
Yeah, definitely. That's one photo series when I come across a bookshelf in a bookshop or in other artists' homes or wherever, and I see a book of mine in the bookshelf, I take a photograph how it is with the other books. That's one aspect I quite enjoy, that if they find their own context.
Do you want to ever rescue it? If it's being badly treated? What's your relation to it? Is it near or far?
Normally I'm quite relaxed. Once I had a moment of anger when I first saw a book of mine sold as a remainder.
But that's narcissism.
Well, that's a sincere answer.
Emma?
Can I ask about the appropriation or reworking of existing artworks in relation to solidifying a canon? That's the best way I can put it. I went to... I was at a thing where Richard Pence, who's in charge of the special collections at the British Library, was talking about the artist books that they hold. And he started with Rusha and Brutus, and they're names that are used, that come up again and again when people talk about, you know, this is what we have. They're names that come up again and again, I'm not saying wrongly, when people who, you know, remake book works. And I'm just wondering if what you think about that whether the kinds of things you choose to remake or to reimagine or to rewrite, whether those choices contribute to this kind of narrowing or solidification of a canon that perhaps sometimes isn't healthy. There was someone at the Richard Pence talk who just said, my God, if I hear another thing about Ahmed Rusha, I shall just die. So
I can understand it. I sometimes feel the same, if especially American discourse is always insisting that this was sort of the first book of its kind, and of course it wasn't. It depends on your attention span. But I mean, I have worked with books that had an influence on me, and I mean, Rothaar's even more than Rusche. But not only, but of course you're right, this is also in itself contributing to a canonization. That wouldn't still stop me from using it if I thought that was a book I wanted to work with. But the scope is quite wide. I mean, you do have 26 gasoline stations and Onkuri D, which are very much canonized already, but also we have the New York Times, certain editions of New York Times, New York Post, New York Newsday, the Stirner, for example, and also the Carry-On. These, some of them are pieces which aren't canonized, and some of these are also pieces which will never be canonized. But I also do that danger. I mean, just recently there's coming out this big anthology of artists who make books by Feiden, and of course they also really have this focus. But I mean, I think if it bugs you, you have to sort of just promote and support the works that you like and you think should be more on the forefront.
Yeah, it's not a criticism, it was it's an observation, I think, and a wondering, really, about it, but thank you.
And we have time for one more question, and then it will be 6 o'clock if it's a quick question.
We've enjoyed all the books, but there are times when you take the books out of a book context, put them in a more installed context, and there were images of the castle where they were on plinths, and then showed the actually very lovely little film of the pianola piece. How would you place that in relationship to the books? Are they two different ways of displaying or in putting the work out into the world? Or do you think of them as blurred?
I think it depends really on the piece. Often works can, some of the works can circulate in different media. Like the most of the photo books also, the photographs could go on the wall.
Do they?
They could, yeah, some of them have. It's just also that I didn't have that many museum and gallery requests who wanted to show them in a different way. And that's also one way I have found to circulate them. But some of them exist in other media, and sometimes, like the pianola piece, it's also a piece of its own which can circulate only like this. I mean, it does also circulate both as a video and as a real pianola in space, which is also a different media again. But I mean, I do have also a practice in public space, and also sometimes with installations in galleries and sculptures, which I haven't. But I haven't had very much display of it, and also I haven't really included it in today's talk. But I think they exist parallel to each other, and I also think that it's something I aspire to and to broadcast on different channels.
Thank you. We're going to end now, but I just want, so we were in Sheffield Station and there's a pianola, and Nikkei said, oh, I could have brought the roll and we could have just done the talk here. And wanting to be in a space of circulation, but I forced you to come here, so thank you. Thank you very much for your fantastic talk. Thank you all.
Thanks.
For your
Thanks.
Attention and questions. Next week, Sophie Jung will be flying in from Zurich to speak to us, and same place, same time. And we have some books you can look at, and we also, those of you who didn't get Transmission, Speaking and Listening, Volume 1, Cole has very kindly brought over a box of books, so a number of people wanted them. So see you next week, and thank you again to Michaela.